SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back a little bit into hour three, and thanks to Chuck for, as always, a serious and direct 45-minute conversation. Andy Serling joining us now, and we'll get back on the oval and talk about results because Andy and the Fox team, America's Day at the Races, a pretty intense 4 days. Andy, good morning.
It was 5 days. I got delayed because of that blowhard Chuck Simon. Seriously? There's two separate issues, right? My getting delayed and Chuck being a blowhard. Which do you think Chuck feels that the worst about? Or neither?
I don't know if he might. Yeah, he might shrug them both off.
I think he will. I think he would agree on both. I think he's proud that he delayed me, and he's proud to be a blowhard.
He's the best.
I can relate.
Well said. Well said. I continue to lose track of days regularly, but you're right. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and focusing on Churchill, and with good reason. Saturday, Andy, and then a few other spots here and there, really worth delving into.
Okay, let's delve into them.
I'll tee it up, and then you can delve. I thought it was pretty interesting that you had four horses, with a real target on their back, coming back for their seasonal debuts, and if not favored, Maxfield and Dunbar were heavy favorites, and Sharing and Owendale were well bet. And
I'm surprised
to come back. Well, to come back, all of them the way they ran, particularly the Dunbar and Maxfield. I mean, I thought that their performances were really particularly outstanding.
Well, I don't know where you want me to start, but as far as Sharing, I think in Sharing's case, I think it was really a case of Manny being sort of aware from the start that Sharing was going to have a bit of a target on her. And he used her to get position, which was the right move. And while we probably had to use her a little more early than they would have preferred, I think it paid off in the position they got and keeping her out of harm's way, essentially. And that's what you're supposed to do when you're riding the best horse, right? And though I think there was a reasonable question going in whether or not she or Oms were the best horses. So it turns out Oms didn't run well, and it was nice how Manny sort of shut the door on Paco trying to sneak up between horses on the turn. So that was also good. She ran well. I mean, she got a decent trip. I wouldn't say she had a perfect trip. She got a decent trip, but it was because they used her to get that position, and maybe more people should pay attention to that and realize that getting position is more valuable than a lot of situations. And she ran very well. I mean, I don't think it was a big jump up from her 2-year-old form. I think it just showed that she's sort of back, and she's the horse to beat in that division. And she got a little late at the end, probably because it's her first start, and also more because she moved early and took some of her energy away. But I thought it was a very good comeback by her. She's a good horse. She really is. So, yeah, she's a horse that can absolutely be a force in that division. As far as Maxfield, I thought he ran really well. Because if you look at the race, it's not like anybody else made up any ground. Now, I understand that the second and third choices ran second and third or third and second. So it's not like there was some major surprise in there, but it's not like there was much movement in the race. And Maxfield was the one running at the end. And for a horse that clearly doesn't really know what he's doing at this point, because he's ducking in the stretch and still acting sort of goofy, he's pretty fast and pretty good. I mean, it came up a pretty quick race. race, all things considered, and you know, faster race than Dunbar ran, and I thought he ran very well. You know, I think that they're faced with an odd circumstance with him because it would probably benefit him to get another sort of easier race next time, and the likely event for that is the probable running of the Bluegrass in early July at Keeneland. But what's that going to do for him, right? It's not going to do anything for his value, whereas this is a horse that they certainly want to be in the Triple Crown races with him, and while you might wish you had one more prep before running the Belmont Stakes, he's still got a month to the Belmont, and it's the Belmont. It's a grade one. It's a classic. It's part of the Triple Crown. It will have real value, and I'm going to argue, and you can call me a homer or not, but I don't think anybody really thinking it through would particularly disagree. This Belmont, from a stallion standpoint, I think has a lot more value than the prior Belmont. Because the prior Belmont, if you look at it as a standalone, I mean, obviously it has value if it's completing a Triple Crown. But as we know, that's fairly rare. It's only happened 13 times. But as a standalone race, horses aren't getting particular stud deals because they won the Belmont. You know, whether it's a creator or a commendable or horses like that. They may get it because it's part of it, like a Stay Thirsty, who ran second, but you know what I'm saying. Sure. But if you win this Belmont Stakes as the first leg of the Triple Crown, and it's at a mile and an eighth, then as a standalone race, I think it's going to have real stallion value. So I understand he's owned by Godolphin, and they're not going to be syndicating him, but they're also looking to stand him, and it's a lot sexier to stand the Belmont winner this year than it is to stand the Bluegrass winner, assuming nothing else going forward. So it's a hard race to skip, and I'm sure it's going to be a real decision they'll have to make. You know, maybe a more prudent one is to go a sort of safer route, but you're not going to get the rewards by going the safer route necessarily. So I imagine they'll probably end up in the Belmont, and I think they should. And he certainly belongs. You know, he's almost running as fast as the other horses already in just his first start. So you have to be impressed by him, Steve.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, for those that are saying to themselves, Andy, well, why is this Belmont going to be, you know, more potential, have more potential as a stallion making race? Well, you know, considering how much of a premium is put on, you know, the one turn mile configuration, like a Met mile and a
cigar
mile.
I don't think it's a one turn. I think it is.
I don't.
Because,
all right, I think it contributes.
If you were to talk to people that sign stallion deals early, whether it's two-year-olds or early three-year-old season, a race that is, you know, obviously the Triple Crown races and the Travers are often bonus races along with the Breeders' Cup, but the one other race that is a bonus race is the Haskell, and that's a mile and an eighth race. And that race is very frequently a bonus race in people's stallion deals. So, and that's one of the reasons a lot of people point to it, especially with horses already have stallion yelp. You'll see if you look back. So I think it's really a distance thing.
Well, you also get, you know, you got a grade one. I mean, right now, Bluegrass is, you know, along with the Wood, you know, are sitting with that grade two trimming. And I would think that, you know, you think about a race like, well, famously, the King's Bishop for Hardspun. There was an enormous tie.
He already had a stud, you know, deal, to, right?
Yes. Yes.
I'm sure he had a caveat.
Yeah, the Malibu.
Grade one, but he had a stud.
So the bottom line is, in name and in grading and in every way, shape, and form, I mean, I think, you know, the demand, you know, the demands of that long backstretch run, I mean, this whole thing is shaping up as, you know, a fascinating exercise. I mean, no matter how you look at it. Let's talk about Dunbar, and you know, had plenty of you know, reasons to, you know, find an excuse, but just, you know, kept coming, and I thought, you know, that was a great launch point for the season.
Well, I'm not sure what excuse me, what overall plenty of reasons the horse had laid over the field on buyer figures, and considering her chief competition on paper, both from a talent standpoint and a tactical standpoint, she's a Julie, didn't break and wasn't making a lead anyway. So, I mean, she really had no excuse to lose that race But she still won, and she came back off the layoff, and it was a solid effort by her. I think if you take away the hysteria of Monomoy Girl coming back off a year-and-a-half layoff, and people's desire to say, oh, she could have run faster, at the end of the day, I think they were not relatively dissimilar races. Dunbar Rose was just a bit faster, and against slightly better competition, though marginally better, as it turned out. But the way the race unfolded, I think Jose Ortiz gave her the right ride in the race the way it was unfolding. I think in retrospect, it turned out to be a ride that had her moving too soon. And this is not a criticism of him. And I think even he would agree that the way it played out, he probably said, if I had to do it over again, I knew the race would be run this way, I'd have waited an extra 16th to an eighth of a mile to make my move. But you can't criticize a rider in retrospect who's doing the right thing, because the race ended up sort of collapsing faster than you would have expected, you know, which isn't surprising because the horses who ended up being up front were kind of a bit overmatched in there. Maybe they'll feel overmatched, but the race was sort of collapsing at the end. So she made her move, and she finds herself in the lead at, what, the 3/16 to the 8th pole, and that's a little early to make the move sometimes, you know, to make the lead. So I thought it was a good effort by her, and probably better than it looks. But let's, you know, keep it in context. It was like 3/5 of a second slower than Maxfield's race, with a pretty comparable pace. So it wasn't some sort of dynamic win, but she has enough, shown enough in the past to say that she'll probably take a step forward in her next race, and that makes her a player in this division. So she did what she had to do. It's a better win than it looks on paper, but I'm not going to say, boy, she stepped forward so much that I think Midnight Bisou should be shaking in her boots. But remember that Midnight Bisou, when she returned last year, right, she had a pretty mediocre effort in winning that Houston Ladies Classic, right? Isn't that a race she won?
That's true. That's true.
And
yeah, that's a fair point.
Step forward from there. So it's her first start, and the same should be said for Monomoy Girl, and even more so, because it was a year-and-a-half layoff. But not in one of these horses ran so impressively that I think you're supposed to be saying that, you know. And, you know, my points on this always seem to always get misconstrued, and I'm not sure why it's so complicated. I've made the point that CC is the present leader of that division. I say she's the leader of the division on accomplishment, the same way when Frosted had won the Met Mile in Whitney, he was the leader over California Chrome, who at that time in the States had only won a Grade 2. He'd also won the Dubai World Cup. It was a leader on accomplishment. It never occurred to me that I thought Frosted was more likely to win Horse of the Year than California Chrome, or win the Breeders' Cup more than California Chrome. Just as I don't think that CC should be and would be favored in a race against Midnight Bisou if they ran it tomorrow. But let's keep in mind, Midnight Bisou has a second in some ungraded race overseas. I don't know how they grade or what they grade, or it's a new race or whatever it is. And it's a second decent race that it was, and it was a terrific race and better than an either race that CC ran. But CC has two Grade 1 wins in this country, and let's discuss accomplishment mattering. Right? And at
sure.
this point, CC has accomplished more than anybody else in that division. I don't think anybody, including myself, thinks that A, she raced to beat Midnight Bisou if they ran tomorrow, or would be favored or should be favored over. But I'm not sure she couldn't hold her own, because her races this year were comparable to a lot of the races that Midnight Bisou ran last year. It's not like Midnight Bisou was running particularly fast figures last year, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yes, and that topic also, didn't we have that same discussion regarding was it I'm losing track, last week, when did Monomoy Girl come back? Last week or 2 weeks
last,
ago?
A week ago Saturday.
Last week. Yeah, a week ago Saturday. And the fact that, yeah, well,
all of this gets to the point that these things need to be settled on the racetrack. And a lot of them will be. And you want them to be. I think at the end of the day, what is shaping up right now is a deeper, older filly and mare division than we've had in recent years. So that's exciting.
Yes.
Because you want to see good yep. horses, but you also want to see competition. Unfortunately, you know, like the big race of last year was that absolutely super race between Elate and Midnight Bisou in the personal ensign. But wouldn't it be great if you had a race like that Chips we had a number of years ago with Beholder and Princess of Silmar in closed hatches, right? When you've got three or four real talents. You know, in the old days when horses used to race more frequently and run against each other, you had these races more often, and they traded off wins because they were really good horses and they didn't all win. You know, the same horse didn't win all the time because they were all so damn good that, you know, they had to all show up with super efforts every time to get the money. And I think this is just an exciting division this year. So that's, to me, that's the best part of it, right? And Dunbar Road absolutely belongs in that division. She should have won the Spinster last year. If she didn't go down to the dead rail, she probably would have won it. So she has a history of showing she belongs, and her Alabama was good. And then you even got fringe players, you know, like the Point of Honors and the Street Fans. And I say fringe not as an insult. They're just not quite at the top tier right now, but they're knocking on the door, and they're pretty darn good too. So there's some depth in this division, yeah. Some nice horses out there.
And we're also getting, we'll use the parallel to talk about the Blame and Owendale's performance and also Everfast performance. And Jack Sisterson has got him, you know, I think, you know, showing some, you know, showing some more early interest.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes a huge difference.
A good job with that horse and probably in general. I mean, I don't see his horses enough, but the little bit I've seen recently, I've been impressed. And I agree. He has run well for him. I don't want to hurt my friend Dale Roman.
Owendale, though.
You know, trained him. But, you know, I didn't pick Owendale because I thought he'd be favored. And I ended up picking a horse that was a shorter price than him, which I wouldn't have done if I had known. Not that, you know, it matters. But I like Owendale. And, you know, one-turn mile races are soon horses like Owendale. And it's interesting because they're faced with a decision, I guess, everybody wishes that they would have, which is, you know, where are they going to run her? And I imagine that Brad is likely to leave the Churchill and run the Foster. Is the Foster a grade one or grade two now?
The Foster is grade one, Clark is grade two, or vice versa?
Not sure. Why don't you look that up? Can you look that up?
Yeah, sure.
I looked that up. And I wouldn't blame Brad for staying at Churchill to run him. But he's got to really consider running a week later in the Met Mile the way he ran on Saturday.
Yeah.
Especially if the Met race to be coming up with a lot of pace, which should help him. And, I mean, he won this race, and he was, once again, the only horse that was making up significant ground as well. Second and third horses were on top of the pace. So it's not as though he, you know, had the race sort of dumped in his lap, right? So, I mean, he probably stays home with Owendale. You know, you look at his races last year, and his presumption will be he wants to go farther. But I'm not so sure I want to just completely dismiss a race like the Met Mile out of hand, because a win in the Met Mile will make his career.
The Foster is a grade two right now. And
yeah, I thought it had been downgraded.
The Clark is the grade one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clark is
the
grade one.
It was the other way around before. You're right. It was.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to run the grade two Foster or run the grade one Met? I don't know. Seems to me a lot more upside to run the Met. You know, I can understand why he'd stay and run the other one, but I think it's a decision he has to make. It's not just cut and dry just because he's stable at Churchill.
Well,
but, you know, either one won't be easy for him. And he's a good horse. He was a good horse last year.
He
ran well in the Travers.
I can make the case. Yeah.
But I
get to make the case, Andy.
What?
I get to make the case tomorrow with his owner. Jim Rupp is going to be on with us tomorrow.
You should definitely get between Brad and his owner. That's a great idea. No, that's a really good idea. I think you should do that. I think that's helpful. I think he would appreciate that. What trainer wouldn't appreciate it?
I'm just saying that we'll float the idea.
In my time, you find new ways to annoy people.
I can take some clues.
I have a big trick bag in that department. what was the other horse we're forgetting about?
We're forgetting about Michael McCarthy's Smooth Like Straight, who really ran.
He did run well. I feel like we're forgetting another race. Wasn't there a fifth stake in there somewhere?
That is the fifth stake.
Maxfield, Owendale, Sharing. Okay. My counting skills aren't up to par. It's probably because Chuck talked over my time, and it's really I should be off by now. So my internal clock is falling apart. So I'll blame Chuck Simon. Yeah, that horse did run. Jesus. I mean, he was involved in the pace. They ran off. You would have thought they'd collapsed. The other horse fell apart, and he just kept running. That's a good horse. And he's been on a big run.
We talked about him yesterday.
Yeah, no, he's been on a big run. I haven't seen him in years. Since he was Todd's assistant in New York, occasionally.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I'm glad you said that, because one thing that popped in my head as I was looking at the PPs, and I realized to ask Michael, I said, how much pleasure do you take in having a stake win like this with Johnny? Because he doesn't get a chance to ride Johnny, and he absolutely was thrilled to make that connection. By the way, Johnny came up, here's the thing. How about Johnny's ride on that Meleka? I brought it up with Graham Motion yesterday.
That was a very good ride in combination with two poor rides. But yes, I agree. That was an excellent ride by Johnny. I could not agree more. He got position from the outside. The idea that he's ahead of the Proctor horse, I don't know what Talamo is doing, but the idea that he had the inside considerably more speed and he ended up behind Meleka, I mean, that was criminal, and I don't know what Julian was doing on the horse that should have won that race for Norm. Hard legacy. I mean, I like Julian, and I think he takes a lot of heat from people unfairly, but it felt like that horse, he didn't get any position whatsoever with a horse that should have won. And I agree. It's not clear that Johnny didn't win on a horse who probably should have finished third or fourth. And I agree. I thought it was a sensational ride. He got great position. Not only did he get great position, other people just seem to be asleep at the wheel. And maybe part of the reason he was able to get that position is he took advantage. But, you know, that's sort of the whole point of using some aggression, right? Being a bit aggressive, especially in turf races, seems to work because so many other people are passive.
Another race I want to bring up, there really was a lot of good racing from Thursday through Monday. One of the horses that's going to get lost in the shuffle here, how about that Dalika that shortened up to the turf sprint? And I thought to myself, I put her, I don't know, fourth, and I figured, you know, I got to be a little defensive. But what about that performance?
Yeah, that horse ran well. I wasn't covering that race, so I didn't pay as much attention as I should. I handicapped the race, and I agree with you. She's not the kind of horse I'd be inclined to bet. Graham has terrible numbers, generally turning back in turf sprints, which sort of scared me off her, too. But, I mean, I had to look at her because she obviously was talented, and Graham realized that he was running her in sort of a goofy spot. But, yeah, I agree. She really ran. So the next day, they overbet that Mod horse, who I don't know why people thought that horse should be a short price sprinting at 5.5 in the turf. That horse actually ran pretty well to be third. The horse coming up, Dirtwind, Gulfstream.
Chewing Gum. And whole race, that was a crazy race anyway.
Well, I guess the second horse, because even
Fig Jelly,
he was a hanger. Now,
he just refuses to win.
There was a story on the winner for the winner to be 7-1 and wire the field because it didn't have speed. And not only not a speed, didn't really look like a turf sprinter, but that horse ran. They kind of knew that horse was going to run. That was a confusing race.
Well, that's also Jack Sisterson.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other Sisterson horse, right, that ran really well. Yep, good point. Yeah, I think it's nice to see, the same. I mean, obviously his home base is California, right?
Jack, no.
No?
No, he's he's
in the Midwest. I've ever really looked at Churchill. And I find that I've enjoyed it, and it's a good education because I'm seeing a lot of trainers like him that I haven't been particularly familiar with. Obviously, you have a lot more people who have been shipping in lately and stuff, but I'm seeing trainers like him that I just had no familiarity with, and clearly he was Kenny McPeak's assistant. Or no?
He was Jack Sisterson was
with was somebody out west?
No.
He was somebody that
not Jimmy. Sweezy was with Jimmy.
Yes, that I know.
Jerkins and Sisterson was. I think McPeak is right. Actually,
I think you're right.
Or Keneally.
Keneally. Okay.
Well, Keneally's like he's like the terrarium for
Brendan
these.
Walsh.
You know, for Brendan Walsh and really got Tom Morley.
Brendan's got a whole new look going with those glasses. The interview. He's really stepping his game up. I was very impressed. I was more impressed with his look than I am with his training.
Oh, that's
and I'm
good.
Impressed with his training. But the new look with his
glasses.
Yeah,
his training is
he's
great.
Really got, it's really making him look very sharp. I was impressed. Yep, and Tom, of course, Tom Morley worked for Keneally. When Tom was at his assistant, Eddie had a real stable in New York. They won a lot. They really did well. And that was the last time he really was stable, sort of, you know, big time in New York. And they were winning. Speaking of Tom, his lovely wife Maggie, who I work with, and I will be at Belmont together this week. We will be covering the first half of the Churchill Cards together at Belmont. So, looking forward to that. And then
the first half
from tomorrow, 8 days from now, we'll be racing again at Belmont. How exciting is that?
You have no idea how exciting it is.
I do. Actually,
we are. You might have an
what
idea.
What lucky person is following me next, so I can get up the phone?
well,
it
might be Richard Mandela. Is that all right? How about Mandela?
I think I've gone way over for a man Richard Mandela status. I think you should have cut me off.
Well, actually, you're 3 minutes short. You're gonna deprive people of 3 minutes.
You're giving Chuck Simon 45 minutes, me a half an hour, and Richard Mandela 15 minutes. You might want to really reevaluate your sort of priorities here.
How good is I got to ask you quickly?
Has been never was getting more time than a Hall of Famer, and I'm not going to say which
real
is
quickly,
which never was besides Chuck and I.
You're out of control. The sister, by the way, thank you to my man Jeff. It was O'Neill. Sisterson worked for
O'Neill. I should have known that. Yeah, now that you say it, right. It was somebody in California, so there was a reason that I thought he was in California.
There you go. All right, so you're not, you know, yeah.
No, but now that you say it, I'm embarrassed that I didn't get it right away.
It's tough to keep them all straight.
Well, I think that he was here with Doug's horses in New York when Doug would ship a horse in. He was sort of the person we talked to at first, if Doug wasn't there.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, he's been given a great chance by Calumet. Brad Kelly has sent him. Kelly's spreading horses all over the place.
He's shown that he deserves a chance. So, working for the
Andy, the Tappet. Hold on, the Tappet winner of Chad's this per capita on Sunday.
Isn't the winner of his on Saturday the Medaglia d'Oro the more interesting one? I'm not interested in per capita.
Okay, all right. I thought Altaf. I mean. It didn't really score out, fast and
not breaking and circling the field from last and getting I-70s buyer in his first dirt start. I'll tell you what.
Yeah. No, I mean it was.
You, I will gladly bet you at dinner that the one on Saturday will have a better career than the one on Sunday. How's that? And I've never discussed with Chad at any point in my life. Other than to tell him I'm not for Tappet's biggest fan, baby.
Well, the fact that he and the runner-up were, you know, the 10 lengths clear, that's usually a pretty good.
I agree. I don't think
a good barometer.
Sort of nobody else got bet there either, right? No, you're not fair.
Yeah.
I think the other one. Oh, I'm not a for Tappet's fan, but maybe it'll improve.
All right. Well, we can't beat the Fox action continues
we'll
this
week.
Outstanding. Starting Thursday.
Yeah, because Churchill runs Thursday through Sunday, Steve, most weeks, except when there's a holiday.
Yes.
And we're on every
day. And
then we'll be on Wednesday for Belmont.
Perfect. Well, and that's a good card. The second half of the card I looked at, there's some good races, the 7th, 8th, 9th. There's a very, or 8th, 9th, whatever it is, a very nice sequence. And we got two-year-olds early. You're probably going to be looking at those pedigrees for the two-year-old fillies race two on Thursday. We'll look forward to it. Fox Sports 2 and plus those other regional networks.
I imagine some BFS1 on Saturday, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't do the program.
Probably.
It's above my pay grade.
It's hard to believe. They've got you They've got you doing so much.
I'm going to go. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Andy Serling, everybody. Case, what do you think? Take a last break or reach for Richard? You talked to him. I didn't. So it's up to Casey. Casey will tell us. Casey says, reach for Richard. Okay. All right. So we're going to reach for Richard. And meanwhile, while we reach out for Richard, you know, they up there, they say Papa Mandela. I don't know. That gives me the, I just, Richard, occasionally Dick Mandela, but I don't know. Papa thing. tomorrow, Foner, let me give you a quick look at this. I mean, just at least what the lay of the land is for the big finale, closing of the meet. The pick five starts at 6:48 Eastern time. 7,000 non-winners of two starts it off going 6.5. They got a field of 9 in here. And haven't had a chance yet to really dive into this. Then you've got Nebraska Breds, non-winners of 3 lifetime, going 6. Phillies and Mares, field of 9. There's a Nickel Claimer, going 6. Phillies and Mares, field of 10. Non-winners of 4 lifetime, Phillies and Mares, going 6. Field of 8, and then finally a 5,000 non-2, 6.5 furlongs, field of 10. So that's tomorrow, and we'll give you as much help as we can on the last Foner Pick 5 of the year. Richard Mandela joins us on the heels of a really good weekend, the thrilling Whittingham on Saturday. United gets the nose down, and then yesterday in the Monrovia, Jolie Olympica with a career best effort. Richard, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's start on Saturday with United, and you know, pretty much makes makes every start exciting.
Yeah, he's an older gelding that just gets better and better.
Any real key to any secret to to winning with him? As he's matured and as he's aged?
No, I think he's just getting better.
What is it about this type of horse, Richard, too? I mean, that as they, that as a gelding, it seems like when you get them dialed in and they I'm not going to say they train themselves, because that's not, certainly that's not true, but it is notable how, you think of a Tin Man, for instance. I mean, that type that, that's just reliable for an extended period of time. What's the key to getting them to that point?
Keep them healthy and sound and happy. That's the biggest key.
I'm trying to get you to unlock the the eighth pole. when a horse has got a certain amount of mileage on them, Richard, and there's going to be, everyone, even fairly young horses are going to, get some arthritis, and they're going to have, maybe a chip along the way. How do you arrive at this point to have an extended career? The horse is, he's made now 13 starts, and missed a little bit of time, here and there, over two different occasions.
Yeah, you fix your problems when they're small and they overcome them and come back better. Or you push them to a point where they've got real injuries and they'll never be the same. That would be the answer, I'd say.
That's a great answer. It's a tremendous answer. Talk a little bit too about stylistically and the way in which he's so much more involved in races than he was certainly going back to the first half of last year, it seems like he's in the race flow, you know, right away.
Yeah, I think he was mentally immature as well as physically, and developed better as he got older. And it kind of shows in his races. He gets more professional, more serious as he goes.
Well, the wins let's say you throw in this fifth career win and the Whittingham, the San Marcos, second in this race a year ago. Of course, the narrow loss in the Hollywood Turf Cup in December of last year, and the unbelievable thriller in the Breeders' Cup. I've never seen anybody, I think I've told you this since then, I've never seen anybody with as big a smile after, you know, running second as you had when he turned in a brilliant effort in that Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of him, even though we didn't quite get there, but to be second in that race is a pretty big deal, I thought.
And no doubt. Distance-wise, Richard, this is always an interesting conversation to me when it comes to turf routers. And, you know, we heard Chad talk about, you know, what he wants to do with his Shoemaker winner, with Raging Bull, you know, keeping him at a mile. Talk about the distances for, you know, because people probably think that a mile and a quarter, mile and a half, there's not a lot of difference, but the turf route scene, it's interesting, and certain horses just seem to, you know, excel at certain, you know, the certain configuration.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, what kind of ability they have. They have, you know, steady going long distance, or a flash of speed, or a quick turn of foot,
yep,
like a miler, you know, so... You know, he's just a big old galloper and keeps going.
Well, he's going to continue on. The Giants Causeway, five-year-old gelding, and in terms of the assignments, a couple more. What do you have circled? Wait now a little bit for the summer?
The immediate future, I'm not really sure. Everything's upside down around the country, and I'll think it over. I might consider the race at Keeneland, the Elkhorn. We could think about the race at Belmont,
Joe Hirsch.
Well, that's later in the year. I don't know if I'd want to ship him around and then have to ship again to Keeneland.
So. Oh, okay. You're talking earlier.
But I'm talking in the next few months, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's all a mile and a quarter.
The Manhattan.
Yeah.
Manhattan, absolutely.
That's a possibility. We'll look at all that stuff and get a game plan.
There you go. Let's turn from United's thriller on Saturday to yesterday, and Jolie Olympica, and this is obviously a lot shorter, and now with two graded stake wins and her three North American tries.
Yeah, it's a really good filly. She's gifted with a lot of speed, but she's also, I think, going to be capable of stretching that out a mile or a little further. We were set with, you know, she was a little immature mentally for America when I stretched her to the mile the last time and got caught on the wire. But I think we had her pointed to a race before we stopped here at a mile that I think she would have done very well in. But then we had a lot of time to freshen again, so I just went back and did what we started, and it worked out pretty well.
It was exciting too. So that's interesting. So we'll expect to see her try to stretch things out going forward.
Yeah, at some point. Yeah.
Well, and I'm obliged because I'm such a fan of the hill course. If we get a chance at some point to run down the hill again, how will she do on the hill?
Oh, I'm sure she'd love it. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a shame we're not on that. It's one of the prettiest races in the world to watch. And horses do sometimes get a little bit mixed up crossing that dirt, but there's not been that many accidents over the years. I think it was an overreaction to shut it down, but maybe they needed to do some work on the turf up on the hill. We don't know. So hopefully it'll come back.
From your mouth to God's ears, as we say, because it really became a favorite, and you would certainly, you know, be as much an authority on, you know, on the course as anybody. Richard, let me ask you about your thoughts on Voodoo Song and, you know, where you go from here with him.
I'm not sure. I'm going to send him out and give him a little freshening for a couple weeks.
He just
seems to be sour. I think he takes offense to my training, so get him away and let him forget about it a little bit.
You're the best. Richard, we're 2 weeks now into the resumption of racing. Just some overall thoughts about things getting back going.
It's so great. I was about to go crazy there just before they started back up. It was just getting too much. And we still miss the fans there so bad. But one thing at a time, and just thank God we're back doing something.
Well, exactly. And let me ask you, too, before we go, because everybody's worried about the three-year-olds, Tis a Magician.
Yeah, he got a little stiff out of the race, and I've sent him to the same thing, freshen up a little bit. I thought he was really good going in the race, but after the race I could see I wasn't right. So back up and give him a break and come back again.
Well, and finally, tell us about Border Town. Got some excitement there?
Yeah, very nice horses. Really learning what his job is. And that last eighth of a mile a couple days ago showed you what he can do.
Clearly. And you've got, how quickly will you face the heavy heads?
We'll see. We've still got another condition that we should look at, and there's some smaller stakes coming up, so we'll try and size up what to do with him.
Well, just always pleased when Mrs. Bass has got a nice one, and Bordertown looks like it. Richard, what a great weekend. Thanks so much, as always.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Richard Mandela, and some feedback on Jolie Olympica and United. He's the big, there's nobody more self-effacing when it comes to that. Took offense to my training. Unbelievable. It's tremendous. Want to thank Richard and Andy Serling, Chuck Simon, and Bill Gallo. Talked to Bill Gallo, got updated on the situation over the hurdles. We're making it over the hurdles day after day. Enjoy the racing today, Fawner Park and Assiniboia. And we'll talk to you in the morning. Should be a good day, too. We've got Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillandale. Big weekend for Hillandale sired runners. And Jim Rupp Racing, Seth Merrow as well. And got to catch up with Pete. We missed Pete last week. And more. Hong Kong, by the way, I don't want to forget, you got one of the all-dirt cards, although Marrero suspended, so you can't bet against him, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania,